This is Christopher, and I want to welcome you to the Time Shifters Podcast. This podcast takes a fun look at the films of long past, recent past, and the almost present, as well as the events and news surrounding them. Matt and I would love to hear from you, and there are several ways to get in touch with us. Look for the Time Shifters Podcast group on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. I'm at Time Shifters Pod, and Matt is at Movies at the Matt. And you can send us a typed or recorded message to timeshifterspodcast@gmail.com. If you haven't already, you can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, and Spotify. Please rate and review the show at any of those outlets. Now, let's head to the Time Shifter studio and start the show. Everyone, welcome back to Time Shifters. This is going to be an extra special episode today because we're bringing in the big guns to talk about the movie today. Joining us over Skype is Alan and James, host of the Test of Time podcast. Gentlemen, welcome to Time Shifters.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Now, this was Matt. You suggested these guys. You kind of brought these guys to the table. How did you discover their podcast?
So I am also a fan of the podcast Large Marge Sent Us, and I had asked them if they had ever discussed the movie Willow, and they said they had, but they did it on another podcast. They went and did it over at Test of Time, so they recommended I listen to that episode. I listened to that episode. It was great. I really liked the banter that everybody had, and then I just kept listening, and now I'm a really big fan of Alan and James's podcast. It's one of my favorites.
Excellent. Sweet.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, as soon as he suggested it, I dialed up a couple episodes. I listened to a few. I don't think it was your latest, but one of your more recent ones where you talked about Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Oh, yeah, that was a fun one.
Yeah, that was very much fun. And I completely agree with you, too, so that helps. So.
Oh, awesome. That's perfect.
That movie, I just...
really great.
Yeah, that movie had just recently rewatched about a year ago or so with my wife, and I was amazed that yes, there are things that date the film, but the story is not one of them. It still really holds up.
Yeah, like surprisingly so.
Yeah, very much, because we were watching a lot of films from the 80s, and we're watching them, and we're just sort of cringing watching the whole thing. Like, man, this is just... not good. And these are like classic 80s movies. And then we hit this one and we're like, this was actually good.
That's the question we always answer. You know, there's always going to be something cringy or something that, you know, a single cell phone would make the entire plot of this movie, you know, pointless. Yeah. But you have to kind of pick, like, is it just bad because, all right, that guy said he called one guy gay, which you wouldn't say today. Maybe you let it slide. But other movies, it seems to be the entire punchline is, but he's a boy. He shouldn't be interested in boys. You know, it's so, you know, those things are like, well, the entire theme of this doesn't really work.
Right. So how long have you guys been doing your show?
2016 we started. Our first episode was Independence Day. We did the original for the sequel Resurgence. Is that it? Independence Day Resurgence?
I think so. Sounds right.
Independence
Day,
completely forgettable. Like, you watch it, and then immediately I challenge someone to name any of the new characters that were not in the original film. It was just so forgettable. Ugh. Yeah, what a waste. You know, they make a bland sequel 20 years too late.
Yeah, you know? I never got around to the sequel.
Same.
It was as if, like, Independence Day was a TV show, and it was not good, not bad, but that's the one shot they have, is they show you one of the like Star Trek Next Generation. It was just kind of like one of the random episodes. Okay, totally forgettable. It was just annoying.
I'm not so sorry. I haven't watched it yet, then.
you haven't missed anything. I just rewatched District 9 for the first time since 2009. And that held up very more than I thought, because I didn't remember it at all, to be honest. That's a good sci-fi film if you haven't seen it in a while.
Yeah, I enjoy that movie.
That was one I think I sat down to watch it once and then got sidetracked. I couldn't watch it the night I was going to watch it, and then I never got back to it. I still haven't seen it yet. I have it to watch, and I still haven't watched it yet. So, yeah, it's on the list.
Yeah, his other movies are on my list, too. Chappie and Elysium, I never saw those.
Yeah, also, I have both of them ready to watch. Just, all I need is time.
So yeah, it's awesome. So 2016. So was that? Is this your first, step into podcasting? Or you guys been doing? Had you done other things before?
No, I'd say we're completely self-taught, right, Al?
Yeah. We never done a podcast before, and it was sort of weird serendipity where I had a few friends who were doing podcasts, and I was thinking about it, and then James Google chatted me one day and is like, "Hey, should we do a podcast?" And I was just like one of those things, like we both were thinking about it independently, and I was like, yes, we should. We need to do a podcast, and we need to do it right away. And just kind of, read some articles and asked some friends and figured out, what mic to get and, all those kinds of questions and just started going from there.
Yeah, I think
we had basically been doing this already with each other, just having long form conversations about one specific movie at a time. And then, that was about the time when podcasts were, before it was almost kind of a joke, like throwing it out there. Why don't we just record it? The Independence Day one is definitely the pilot episode, and we learned a lot from it. when I recommend the podcast, I say any of the episodes, watch in any order, whatever movie you want to listen to. But maybe like after episode, after like 10, we really started to get our stride there.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, I think some of the most fun podcasts that I've listened to are all kind of based on that idea that we were doing this anyway. All we did was add a microphone.
Right. And how long have you guys been doing your show? Doing a few years as well, right?
Yep. Yeah, Matt and I have been doing the show for a few years. I've been podcasting for quite a bit longer. This particular show kind of came and went a couple times. And then also I host another show, Cold Orphan Entertainment, where we just celebrated our 7th year. So I think off and on, I've been podcasting for about a decade.
Wow.
Impressive.
you're an OG. You're like one of the people who had like an email before anyone else had an email. Podcasting to people listening on iPods, basically.
Yeah, possibly. Maybe a decade ago. Yeah. Well, I think our first show, I'm trying to remember the first time we sat down and did a show. We talked about, we decided to do a topic on Doctor Who, and it was after Russell Davies left the show. So whenever that was, so 2009-ish, maybe something. So I think about it, I think 2019 probably is like the decade anniversary, yeah.
Wow.
So there was podcasts before us, and it was and listening to other podcasts are kind of what inspired me to like let's try to do this. I was already managing a website forum, so it was just lots of type discussions and everything. So it's like, why don't we verbalize this kind of stuff?
Yeah,
and that's where it all started.
Nice.
Now your guys' show, the premise, just kind of based on the title alone and what we've already discussed, is pretty much you just go back to watch older films that maybe you've watched or haven't watched in a long time, and you just discuss whether or not they hold up. Are they still entertaining in today's mindset, right?
That's exactly right. You are listening to the show. That's what we do, and there's a lot of things that define this metric. Is it, like we hit that before, is it a social message, or a lot of times are these a lot of these early 90s films, mid-early 90s, the first CGI films, oh my god, it just takes you out, you can't watch some of these things.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of things can really tell you about whether or not just this kind of movie, there's no appetite for this, but this movie is like shooting up a whole school, and it was kind of like, wow, look at that rebel, and we're like, maybe that doesn't really hold up today. So, that's how we've been doing it, and it's just something we want to see how the films have aged.
Yep.
Right, and it becomes an excuse basically just to rewatch old movies and chat about them, and I guess you guys can relate to that, right?
Yep.
And it's fun, and it doesn't always mean, if a movie stands the test of time, it doesn't necessarily mean that we like it or don't like it. There are movies that we love that we sometimes say don't stand the test of time. The example I always use is The Wizard, the Fred Savage video game movie. love that movie. It will always, forever, as long as I live, hold a very special place in my heart. But that movie doesn't stand the test of time, not a little bit. I mean, it's ridiculous. You watch it now, and it's like, what is this? And like the kid who's really good at video games, like, has autism, maybe, but then they cure him at the end. Like, what? It's like insanity. But you know, and it doesn't mean that I hate it, because I don't. I still like it, but like, no, it doesn't stand the test of time. So, you know, it's just an interesting way of kind of like looking at these old movies.
Yep, absolutely.
But is the Power Glove still so bad?
So bad. So bad.
Power Glove's off her, mister.
Classic line.
Awesome. Yeah, it is fun going back and watching some films that, you know, you don't think of them being that old until you watch them again. I mean, because these are the films that we grew up watching, you know, the 80s and 90s. And you start seeing the patterns of films that are like the 80s, you think of all these movies and then you watch the movies and you're like, there really isn't a story here, is there? I mean, it's just they're just long music videos, some of them, or just little montages of things going on that don't actually in the end mean anything.
Oh yeah. Did you guys see The Wizard like in theaters by any chance?
Not in theaters, but I've definitely watched that movie way more times than I should have.
I just had one of these moments. I was actually at Alan's recent birthday party. I saw his son and was talking to him about the Switch. We could play all these old Super Nintendo games, and I'm like, "Wow, you're playing like you could play all these games!" And because I remember we thought even seeing Super Mario 3 was blowing us away. And you remember what he said, Al, about the Super Nintendo games?
Oh yeah, that they look terrible.
Yeah, I'm like, Donkey Kong Country, that's great. And he's like, no, they're terrible.
Yeah, no, that was like, yeah, when we first plugged that in and saw what it could do, we were just like, oh my god, it's amazing, nothing will ever be this awesome.
And he even said the same thing. I wanted Al to record it because I asked him, I go, well, your graphics are the best. And he goes, yeah, they're never going to get better then. Like, yes. I'm like, ah, yes, the fallacy of every 10-year-old.
Yeah, I tried to give some video games, obviously, movies, television shows, it's all the same. When it comes to the visual effects and some of the graphics and stuff, when I'm watching them, that's kind of one of the things that I try to give a pass, because it's kind of, that's what they could do then. And if they did it now, they would be better. But I try to look past that and go to like, okay, but are the characters, are those what's holding up? Is the story what's holding up? Because like, you go to television, to go back to like Babylon 5. When Babylon 5 first aired, and it was all CG, and we were amazed at what they were doing. But you watch it now, obviously it looks like horrible video game CGI, but a lot of the stories still hold up and are entertaining. So you have to kind of ignore some things in order to kind of go a little deeper.
Right. I was very excited to see this movie, because this is a movie that you were just saying, kind of like some of those Chappie films that you were just saying it was on your list. I feel like this has been on my list for years, and I just never would have seen this film had it not been for this podcast. So I was glad to finally see it, because all I knew about it was something time travel. I like time travel films, but I never seen it. That's, I knew something about it, and so yeah, that was exciting. How did you pick this film?
This was just one that I hadn't seen. I tell you what, before we get into this, we do have a little bit of news we wanted to talk about real quick, and then we'll get into the movie, and so we don't want to get too far ahead of where we want to kind of go here. Yeah. So Matt, you said you had a couple short news stories.
A little bit. We kind of tend to like keep our ear to the ground with kind of some of the more mainstream things going on. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you are familiar with his work, but Robert Forster had just passed away a couple weeks ago.
He was an actor. It was a name I knew, and it was probably someone that I've seen in films. But he's not one of those actors that just snaps right into my head. I would probably go back and watch some films or see some snapshots or something and go, oh, right, that guy.
Yeah, great character actor, mm-hmm. had a prominent role in Jackie Brown. Right. And the reason it was kind of at the forefront for me, and I think for a lot of people, is he had just, he had had a pretty significant role in the last season of Breaking Bad. And they brought him back for the new Breaking Bad movie on Netflix, El Camino, and he died the day it came out.
Oh, wow.
Oh.
That, yeah, puts a little dark kind of pallor on there. That's a shame.
And he's a wonderful actor. He's one of those actors who will say less, and you'll see so much more acting on mm-hmm. his face and in his body language, and he's just always been credited as kind of like this very silent actor, and more of that was coming out in this role. So I'm watching that, having read about what had happened like 2 days earlier, and I'm just sitting there going like, what the just yeah. a hell of a way to go out. Like, this right. was a really great performance he gave in that movie.
Yeah, well, it's good that he comes out. He kind of his final thing ends up being something that people are going to really enjoy, but it does make you that much more sad that mm-hmm. that's the last, you know, you're not going to see anything else new from him.
Right.
Yeah, that's a shame.
It's always fascinating when someone kind of almost peaks on one of their performances like this. You know, mm-hmm. of course, Heath Ledger and Brandon. We reviewed Brandon Lee's The Crow, and his role in Breaking Bad was fantastic. You described it perfectly. If people don't remember, without spoiling, he's the guy who helps transport a main character all the way across the country and barely says anything, this character. And he's just, it's really cool, even a few lines he says. And,
right.
I haven't seen the El Camino movie. I'm waiting to see it with my siblings, but I hear great things.
If you like Breaking Bad, you'll like this movie. I had been waiting for this to come out for a while, and I didn't get a chance to see it the day it came out, and then I had to work the next day, and I got home and I said to my wife, you've got 20 minutes to tell me whatever you want to tell me, and then I'm going to sit and watch this movie, and for 2 hours, I am off limits. And as a big fan of Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul and the kind of storyteller that Vince Gilligan is and the kind of director he is and the way he frames his shots, you will not be disappointed if you are on board with those things.
Nice. Good to hear.
So the only other bit of news I have is a bit on the superhero front, which we always kind of stay with. Zoe Kravitz has been cast as Catwoman and Paul Dano as the Riddler.
I don't have a problem with either.
I don't know if I've seen Zoe Kravitz in anything, but Paul Dano, because I know they were talking about getting Jonah Hill as the Riddler, mm-hmm. but then talks broke down because supposedly he was asking for more money than even Batman was going to be making.
Wow.
And so they just walked away from him, and then like 2 days later they said Paul Dano, and I went, better choice. He's an amazing, amazing actor.
Sweet. Okay. I'm not familiar with him, to be honest.
He was in Prisoners. He was in There Will Be Blood. He is a wonderful actor that if you're going to put him in the role of the Riddler, we're probably going to see the best live-action Riddler.
Sweet.
At least that's what I'm hopeful for.
Well, it's going to be like, oh, no, I forgot about Jim Carrey. I was going to say it's the only live-action Riddler we've seen since the 60s, but nope. I forgot about Jim Carrey.
Jim Carrey's Riddler makes me cringe every time.
Yeah, no, it's yeah, no.
And there was one on that, on Gotham, I think, right?
Yes.
Oh, okay, yeah, I haven't watched a lot of the DC, like the Batman-themed shows, the Gotham I haven't watched, yeah, so I didn't know.
Yeah, I gave up on Gotham after like a season or two, and I think when I stopped watching, he wasn't the Riddler. He was still Edward Nygma, who was like the weird, quirky guy who
mm-hmm. right.
was kind of descending into madness but hadn't become the supervillain yet. Nathan Matt Reeves, the director, his films have been great.
Yes.
He did two of the Planet of the Apes films, did Dawn and War of the Planet of the Apes, and Cloverfield. He's done those, so it's going to be a good cast, I think.
Yeah.
This one should be interesting. I think I haven't been real interested in a lot of Batman films of late. This one probably is piquing my interest a little bit more just because it's like that fresh start. I'm kind of looking forward to a fresh start with the Batman franchise.
Wanting to just kind of wipe everything clean, kind mm-hmm. of get away from the connected universe and Ben Affleck's Batman, but it even seems like they're trying to get away from, like, the Nolan Batman. They want to go to Batman the Detective, not Batman. I've got gadgets and I punch really hard.
Right, yeah.
Right, did he say he's not a hero? Pattinson, he said his version of Batman is no hero or something?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'm glad it's not like the Batman, colon, Dawn of the War of the Ages. You know? They're not trying to tell you, like, this is the first in an epic that drops so many hints that you don't know until movie three. It's just the Batman. Give us a good Batman story. It probably doesn't need to show the murder of the Wayne parents.
How are you going to remember how he becomes Batman unless they show it for the 15th time?
Yeah. I think they should honestly just take the inspiration from what Spider-Man from Homecoming.
Right.
The MCU, they're like, you get it. Like, and they even had a nod to it in Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Like, I'm telling you for the last time. Like, he got bit by a spider, okay? we just don't need that that scene. But I think he's going to do a great job.
And just Zoe Kravitz in Big Little Lies is phenomenal. And I feel like she's going to be great.
Cool.
Like, I really, really like her a lot. I think she'll be a great Selena Kyle / Catherine.
This could be the third, you know, you wouldn't even think of it. This would be the third solo non-DC movie universe. That would be a major hit. If you start with Shazam was a hit, then the Joker a big hit. And, you know, this one's, they can really get people, a couple movies like this, and people will really be on board for DC again.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And maybe that should be their thing. Maybe they shouldn't keep trying to mimic the Marvel and with all the shared universe and stuff. Right. And maybe they need to just do what they're good at and just do these. Here's a standalone film. Maybe it gets a sequel or whatever. Don't worry about that other thing. You know, just do what they know best, which is what they've done in the past and been successful with it.
That's what I would be on board for. It's almost like, all right, we're going to have all these characters from this one comic book publication, but imagine if the movies were like an anthology. Every movie, different cast. Like, you could do, like, the next five Batman are all different actors. Just do that.
Just like you have a different artist coming in and
exactly
reimagining it. Yeah. Yeah, that'd be interesting. It's fine. For a true comic book geek or whatever that's going to the film,
right.
I would think they would be on board for that.
It is interesting because I used to read comics, and when you read these, it's not that Detective Comics came out every week. It was, like, I was Superman, so it would be Superman came out once a month, but then there was Adventures of Superman, Man of Steel, and then Action Comics, and they were, everyone knew they were very differently drawn.
Mm-hmm.
Man of Steel was not as well drawn, it was drawn very differently, like, they were different experiences. I mean, I don't think they would ever do that just because they want to invest the franchise of people liking them, but even as a TV show, kind of like that movie where everyone played Bob Dylan, you know, like five different roles.
Yeah, that was awful. And I love Bob Dylan, and that movie was awful.
Yeah, I didn't see it. I'm not there.
I'm not there. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, yeah. That movie was just, it was so weird for the sake of weird that it just didn't work, in my humble opinion.
Fair enough. So that's all you've got?
That's what I got.
All right, sweet. Okay, well, then we'll go ahead and take a little break. And when we get back, we're going to talk about, how I forget, 1984.
Yep.
The Philadelphia Experiment.
Are you looking for some great indie podcasts to listen to? Check out the Pod Nation list on podchaser.com. where you can find a list of great indie podcasts, get links to their official websites, and even listen to some of their episodes without needing to create an account or log in. Here's an example of one of the great indie podcasts you can find on Pod Nation.
It is the one thing that unites all living things and divides them at the same time. It is both freeing and paralyzing. It is the end of pain and the beginning of pain. In Coffin Cast, I seek to shine a light in the darkest of all places that we all will face, death. A mix of true crime, strange and bizarre death stories, with a hint of education, and sometimes humor mixed in. Hosted by me, Kristen, with new episodes every Monday at 8 a.m. Central. Available wherever you listen to podcasts.
So once again, for some great indie podcasts, check out the Pod Nation list on podchaser.com.
All right, so you were asking how this ended up on our list, why we decided to choose this film. This was a film that I remember from the earliest days of, like, VHS rentals. This was probably one of the first movies that ever came home from the mom-and-pop video store. I think we probably dubbed it, because I'm sure we had a copy in the house, and so I watched it a few times when I was a kid. It was 1985, you know. Apparently this thing came to video. It, like, premiered in August of 84 and was on video by October. I mean, it was, like, the quickest turnaround, like, at that point in history.
Wow.
And so it was really quick to hit that burgeoning video rental shelf. And so we had a copy of it. I remember watching it a couple times as a kid. And then I don't think I've seen it since. It's probably been, you know, some 30 years since I've seen the film. So it was just one that, I often use this podcast as an excuse, as if I really needed one, to watch an old film that I hadn't seen in a long time. And so that's how this one ended up on the list. It was just, I knew Matt was a time travel fan, and I'm like, okay, I know there's time travel in the Philadelphia Experiment. I remember liking it as a kid. Let's watch it again and see how it is. See if it's still a decent film. And so that's my story with the Philadelphia Experiment.
I think it totally reminds me of how I know this film, actually. This has to have been a video rental store where I kind of read the back of the box. I was intrigued by it.
Well, that cover, the VHS cover on the thing is awesome, because it's got, you know, the Philadelphia Experiment on top. It's got some device with the glowing lights coming from behind. I mean, it's a great VHS cover box. It grabs your attention, and you're kind of like, ooh, is that something I want to watch? Yeah.
When we had our time travel discussion episode, you had mentioned this, because as I was watching, I'm going, why do I know the beats of this movie? Oh, I think Christopher told me about it.
I might have. Yeah, we did do a whole episode where we were just talking about some favorite time travel and just the time travel ideas. I'm sure this one did come up.
Yeah.
And you guys had either not seen this or had only seen it ages ago as well, or?
I had never seen it.
Okay.
It was a brand new experience for me, and I think I had heard about it. I think I was like you were saying, James, like something time travel, but I didn't really know anything about it. And I've mentioned this in our podcast before. I watch a lot of these movies by renting them from my local library. Mm-hmm. And I had a conversation with the librarian there when I was taking it out. She's like, I think I remember this movie. It's about time travel, right? And I was like, I think so. And she was like, I think I really like this movie. I think this is a good one. And then actually just the other day I returned it to the library and I was talking with her again. I was like, yeah, you were right. It was about time travel. But no, I had never seen it before.
All right. Awesome.
Yeah.
So I'm bringing like first time. So I got three first time watchers. That sounds like, wow. I'm not usually the one that come with the film that I'm the only one that's seen.
That no one's seen.
Yeah, that no one has seen before. That's awesome. We watched it. So that was, you know, my history with it. This is your guys' first time watch. I'll start, since our guests here, let's start with Alan. Just initially, what did you think, like, on the surface of the film?
I mean, I think my first gut impression is that, man, the acting was bad. I mean, there was just, and not everyone, but definitely, you know, the lead character, David, I was like, this guy is just like terrible. And I also think it's not, maybe part of it is just his voice is like, he just sort of has like one of those kind of like monotone voices. And then maybe it's not fair to call him a bad actor because of just his, you know, that's just how his voice is. So, if he's listening, Michael
Paré? Is that how you pronounce it?
I'm not sure. Yeah, it's P-A-R accent E. So it's Paré, yeah. Or Pear, Par. Yeah.
But, yeah, I was really just not a big fan of his, which is a problem because he's, you know, in pretty much every scene of the movie. I was surprised to see the woman from RoboCop. It took me a second to figure out where I knew her from.
Yeah, Nancy Allen, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm like, she looks familiar. And on our podcast, we recently did Mr. Mom. And for a second, I was like, wait, was she one of the women in Mr. Mom? Was she like a friend in that movie? And I'll admit, I had to IMDb it to check. I was like, oh, right. No, it was RoboCop.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, the greatest treat in the cast for me was seeing Needlenose Ned Ryerson from Groundhog Day, Stephen Tobolowsky, who just looks so young. He has so much hair in this movie.
I didn't even make that connection until you just said that. And I'm like, I knew that guy seemed familiar.
Yeah, I was like, wait, is that Needlenose Ned? And yeah, I mean, he's just, you know, he's one of those character actors that just pops up in things. But I was just really excited to see him.
Awesome. Jeff, how about you? What was your kind of initial reaction to the film?
Oh, James.
James, sorry.
Oh, yeah, mine, you know, for me, these 80s films, sort of like a 90s film, where it's either the good CGI towards the end of the decade, and you get a lot of real good stuff, or some of that beginning stuff that just quite didn't have it. Like, if you look at Jumanji again, you know, love Robin Williams, but those animated alligators, was it the alligators? Oh, the monkeys, I think.
The monkeys and the bees, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's a difference. And, you know, sometimes you say, well, they didn't have as good graphics back then, but you know, we also go by this is a film that came out, I guess, 7 years after Star Wars, even Indiana Jones films. I felt that a lot of the special effects to me looked like kind of like Star Trek the television series special effects, and it was just kind of one of those 84, like, I wonder, but I guess they did Return of the Jedi, but you know, this film did not have that kind of budget. Like, was there really that big of a difference?
Well, it's interesting you bring that up, because I thought that too. I'm sitting there going, like, these effects are okay. I guess they just didn't have the budget. So I went and looked at their budget, and then I compared it to two other big sci-fis that came out right around the same time. So its budget was $21
million. Wow.
And comparing that to another big sci-fi you may have heard that came out in 84, Ghostbusters...
Right.
Was made on $25 million, and
wow.
Then the very next year, Back to the Future made on $19 million.
Yeah, so there you go. I mean, it's one of those. I did think this was kind of almost 70s sci-fi technology. Like, yeah, it looked like the effects of the orange and blue glowing on their skin kind of looked like if you ever saw the 60s Star Trek when they're beaming to the surface.
Yeah, sure. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, well, this was still pre-CGI. It was all animated. It was just, you know, cell animation just overlaid onto the live-action film, whatever. So, and then the blue screen or the matting to, you know, place the boat into the Philadelphia Harbor when they film it in South Carolina. But they had to mat the boat so it looks like it's in Philadelphia. And, there's a couple times you're looking at, like, you can almost see the cut line at the bottom of the film. And you're like, wow, that ship's sitting really low in the water there.
Because I thought that, too. I was sitting there going, like, this isn't too bad for the 70s. And then I look up the year and I went, oh. Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would have been ahead of its time for the 70s, yeah. So, Matt, what was your initial reaction of the film then? Maybe special effects aside.
Yeah, special effects were a bit distracting. I had the same reaction to the lead actor. And I had actually seen him in one other movie a few years ago that came out the same year called Streets of Fire. Don't watch it. it was just a movie a friend of mine really strongly recommended, and she wanted to know what I thought, and he acts the exact same way. He's very monotone. He's just sort of reading his lines, and So that's just him as an actor, and he's still acting to this day. He does a bunch of like indie stuff.
Oh really?
Yeah. And yeah, he's like, because this is a little bit of a cult movie, but not such a big cult movie. So he kind of gets invited to things like around this and some of the other things he's done.
I think it's a cult film in the time travel fan fandom or whatever. Outside of that, I don't think it really has much
right
draw.
But as a time travel movie, I really liked it because it does one of my most favorite, if not my most favorite, time travel theory, which is cyclical time travel theory, that you don't go back and change the past and go back to your present to see everything's different. You find that anything that happened always happened that way,
mm-hmm.
which is a really difficult bit of writing to pull off because you have to kind of keep all of your ducks in a row and figure out, okay, if this is how the movie's going to end, we need to explain it was always going to end this way. And it's not Marty goes back and does one thing and now his family's different. It was always that way.
Right.
And you were the reason it happened. Always that way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this movie does. And I'm sitting there going, yes, you never get to see this.
Nice.
But it's always interesting to see in any time travel movie, what are the rules of this particular time travel?
Right.
I mean, is it going to be Back to the Future rules where you're sort of getting sick in the background? Or is it going to be Terminator rules where you can even have your own baby in the future? You know, it's what it is. Don't even think about it. That this one, it kind of had a little bit of both. It did have you're getting kind of sick in the being in the wrong time. Mm-hmm. And kind of combined the lightning of Back to the Future 2.
Yeah, no, I wasn't a film that I'd seen in a long time. So it was a lot of fun for me to sit down and watch it again and kind of, there was scenes that I remembered, you know, from when I was a kid, and there's a lot that I didn't remember. But I was kind of, I'll admit, a little surprised that in the end, it's kind of like, that was still enjoyable. I mean, I really still really enjoyed it. Yeah, the actors, I don't know where they thought to cast this guy that sounds like he grew up with the Bronx, mm-hmm. and then write the character as someone that grew up in Northern California.
Right.
I don't think that's where you get that accent, you know?
definitely. Yeah, it was also just kind of distracting. Like, you're like, wait a second, what?
Yeah, he's I even mean, got, like, the hair, the, you know, that sort of does, like, that's a real, like, 80s Bronx kind of guy or something. You know? Not wine
like
country.
Light.
What's that?
This guy was like a Stallone light.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. He's like a poor man Stallone. Yeah.
Yeah, he was talking tough. And it reminds me of, I don't know if you've seen the movie Highlander, but that's where Christopher Lambert plays a Scottish person. And yet, what's the lead actor again?
Sean Connery? Or are you talking about
Sean Connery?
Yeah.
Yeah, Sir Sean Connery plays, I believe he's a Spaniard and Egyptian.
Yeah,
he plays in Scotland. I mean, it was just one of these, yeah, it could have been, he could have been fine, like, as that guy, but he should have been, you know, Joe from Brooklyn. Like,
right.
You're right.
Well, in both, him and his friend Jimmy was another one that was obviously very, like, Italian descendant. Is like, why didn't you set these guys in New York? Why did you say they grew up in northern in wine country California? They have a farm in California. No, they don't. These guys don't. They couldn't have.
It's so much cheaper to film in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, that's it.
And call it New York City.
Well, I mean, I guess they wanted to have like a cross-country road trip element to it, and it starts in Philadelphia, but also it could have started in Utah or whatever, and they make their way to, you know, the Bronx or, you know, something like that. Like, yes, they called it the Philadelphia experiment, but they didn't have to, you know? They made it up, so that's the cool thing about fiction.
Yes, no. I don't know if you guys read this or know anything about the history of this. This movie is actually based on, like, an urban legend. This is based on, like, conspiracy theory kind of stuff. Supposedly in the 40s, there was an experiment to create a radar invisible field or something that could be used on U.S. Navy ships. And supposedly, the stuff you see acted out in this film with the weird lights and the people going kind of crazy and the burns and the people, in the end, we see the people sort of buried in the plate decks of the, deck plates of the ship. That all right. comes from this urban legend. That all comes from this conspiracy that it happened, it was a horrible accident, and the government covered it up. All that is like a real conspiracy theory that this film was based on. So I thought that's kind of fun.
I did not know that.
Things kind of deal where there's the this whole mind control thing was real and it's based on those things.
It's fascinating. You read up on it. There's all kinds of stuff that people think that made the ship disappear. There's theories that it actually teleported to another place in the world and then came back. And then sailors went mad. And it was you read up on this stuff and you're like, okay,
wow, interesting. Okay, so I guess they did have to start it in Philadelphia then.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly.
Lest you get the conspiracy theorists angry.
But you read up and supposedly it did take place on the USS Eldridge. They used the name of the ship that is the ship that was supposedly at the center of this experiment and everything. And then they took it from there and decided, I think we should do a time travel tale.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's worth digging up. You just do a little wiki dive on Philadelphia experiment and get some interesting stuff.
It's a deep rabbit hole that I went down.
Firmly place the tinfoil hat first before you go.
A lot of like the stuff that like is out there conspiracy theory wise was like started by the person who wrote the book, and they're like, see, there's receipts, like somebody had contacted the government, and then when people looked into it, it was like, that was you.
I didn't go that deep.
I went deep.
So we're a little miscast. The effects aren't all that great.
It's a really good concept, though. I like the idea because I know we're a little bit all over the place, but the synopsis is...
We should definitely do a synopsis. Sorry.
It's 1943. The United States Navy is developing a new technology to cloak ships from radar, and this is being tested on the USS Eldridge. Something does go wrong, sending two of the ship's officers 41 years into the future. And at the same time, a giant singularity has opened because another experiment is taking place in 1984, and the two have connected through time, and if they don't shut it down, the world will be consumed in this singularity. I think the concept is really clever these two... experiments that are trying to do the same thing 41 years apart have connected across the space-time continuum, and unless you send somebody inside to turn it off, everyone's going to die. And I really like that concept, especially since you get to the point where Dr. Longstreet is like, I already know how it's going to end because everyone said they saw you do it. And the guy's like, I haven't done anything yet. And it's that cyclical time travel theory that I'm just sitting there going, cool, I can't wait to see how this plays out.
Yeah, they did an awesome job with it. I do think that the film has one of the major problems with the story is that your character has to keep doing things in order to keep the plot moving.
Right.
Like, had he just... Like, when the military police showed up in the hospital, after his friend just disappeared, he's looking for someone to believe his story. His friend disappears in thin air in front of a room full of people. Oh, I got to get out of here. Why? And then, the military police, I'm going to run. Like, wait a minute. Had you just stopped, you'd have a room full of people that can collaborate your story. The military police, you're part of the military.
They would have taken you back to Dr. Longstreet, and we could have saved several lives.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And the movie would be over in 30 minutes.
there is like a weird like body count where they just don't really mind like, killing all of these other, random people. There's one part like kind of towards the end where, they run some, I guess, quote unquote, bad guys, although they're not really bad guys. They're just, military guys doing their job off the road, and, their car explodes. And then David like kind of runs over, and at first I thought like, oh, he's going to try to like pull the guys from the car because he doesn't want them to, you know, burn to death or whatever. But no, he's just looking for some documents and is perfectly fine to let whoever's in the car, you know, die a grisly death. And he's like, hey, I got these papers, which are also somehow not burnt, even though they were in a car that was on fire.
Yeah, and those papers give him, say that, oh, this is where I'm going to find my answers. You mean that the people have been trying to get you to the whole film.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
the big X on these papers. That's where we need to go.
Yeah, that part with the car, though, is what kind of put me... Because it is later in the movie, and I was invested, I guess, just to see where it was going to go and how it was going to resolve. But that whole chase scene was so ridiculous, and then the car rolls down the hill, it flips over, there's a beat, and then it explodes, and it was so over-the-top ridiculous that, like, so many things have parodied and mocked today that I just started laughing, and I go, this movie can go wherever it wants. I think it's hilarious, and it doesn't mean to be.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's right after the time, or right after the moment where the two of them finally sleep together in the... like the back of the horse truck. Right.
Yeah.
It's so ridiculous.
Yeah, that's not romantic.
No.
Right?
No.
I mean, that's... Yeah, I was like, wait, they're not really gonna... Oh, yeah, no, that's the definitely the implication. You know, the slow burn of a love story, which started off with, like, a kidnapping. Yeah, it's that's a whole very weird subplot as well.
Yeah, I think that was kind of forced in. I think that was like studio rewrite, studio, no, we got to have a romance. You got to have a love story in this. It couldn't just be at this action film. You had to have them falling in love. So I think it there's a reason it feels forced because it was. Yeah.
Yes, totally agree.
Yeah.
You know, I had just recently seen the original Terminator film because the catching up for the new Terminator film coming out. And I thought there might be kind of a John Connor situation here where I thought, oh, like, I think he's going to go back in time at some point, but maybe he's fathering his own son or daughter now, and that will happen. And you know, I thought it was going to be one of those, maybe that son will save him in the future. Because I happened to see there was a Philadelphia Experiment too, but yeah, a couple things didn't go the way I thought they would.
Yeah.
You know, there were some jokes in this film that I was kind of had me. I was intrigued by them, but I feel like they probably hit a lot harder in 1984. It's something like I don't think the young generation. I don't think your son would understand the Back to the Future when he says, "I want a Pepsi Free. I want a Tab." Like, he's not going to get those jokes.
Mm-hmm.
Right. The same way these guys were having the "Whoa, this ain't 1943 anymore" because they see a Coke can. And like an aluminum can of Coca-Cola, and they also see a German beer.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I did find that kind of intriguing. Like, huh, I guess all those old, you know, enjoy a Coke from the 50s and 40s were glass bottles.
Yeah.
And I would imagine you probably weren't seeing many German beers popular in the 40s.
Yeah, so. No, not when you're at war with the Germans, no.
Right. And I did notice before, even a little later when Nancy Allen's character is eating Chinese food, I was like, oh, she should have said we're going up to get Japanese. But I was like, you know, 1984, I don't think Japanese food had really, I don't think the sushi thing had really crossed over yet.
Oh, no.
So they wouldn't have made that joke.
Yeah. Now, that's one of the things I did really appreciate about the film is how the guys from the 40s handled themselves in the 80s. So many times we've seen this where someone travels time and you spend maybe 15 minutes of them going, ah, what is this crazy contraption? The door opens by itself, you know? And then within 15 minutes, they navigate the world without any issues.
Right.
These guys never stop being kind of not amazed or like, ah, magic or anything, but just amazed at what the future has brought. You know, the television, the talking alarm clock, what the hell's an automatic, that kind of stuff. You know, they're not like shocked or scared of it. they're just amazed at it, and I really appreciate that. That was really well written and well directed for them.
Yeah.
I thought the automatic transmission was actually very clever because I was thinking, what, it's even easier than a manual. But it's like saying today that we don't even use keys anymore. You just press the button to start. But everyone knows you need to put your foot on the brake when you do it. Mm-hmm. You know, that, like someone coming from 1995 wouldn't know what to do with that.
Right.
And I thought that was just that was a clever little one there. And they had the video games in there, which were, you know, so modern for the time.
Yeah, and I like that he looked at him like he just, well, what are those?
Yeah.
You know, you didn't get the scene of him trying to play it or looking at it. He just kind of looked at it like, that's just one of those weird things that I've been seeing around here today, you know. And they didn't make a big deal out of it. It's really nice. And it all works, too. There's, like, helicopters. When they find themselves in Nevada and they're chased by a helicopter, they don't know what the hell it is. Helicopters really weren't a thing until just a couple years later. Before
Vietnam, first one.
The automatic was. People were saying. I remember reading that, you know, the automatics were around, but you're only going to find them in like very high end luxury cars like Cadillac.
Yeah.
So not something these guys are going to be real familiar with, and they probably weren't called automatics. They were probably had some crazy name like, you know, the auto shifter or some, you know, weird catchphrase name or something. So yeah, they just did a really nice job with that. Yeah, the aluminum can, what's so light, what the hell is it made out of, you know, like that's actually really clever, and it is the kind of stuff that helps this film kind of hold up a little bit better, I think.
And I feel like that kind of paid off. There's this, it's kind of a throwaway line, but I found it really funny with all of that stuff going on where he has to go to the singularity, and that one guy who's been chasing him the whole movie is like, yeah. So what did you think of 1984? And his only response is, TV's nice.
Yeah.
Like, none of that. He doesn't really like any of the other stuff. He doesn't like the highway congestion. He doesn't like the tin can. He doesn't like the automatic, even though he was driving one.
Yeah.
TV's nice.
Yeah.
That's it. That's his takeaway.
But I did like the sergeant's reply. You haven't seen enough of it yet.
And there was a lot of like that one movie that they were watching, like in the bar. I didn't recognize the movie that they were watching. I kind of got the sense that was like a movie from the same production company or whatever that had done this movie, that they were kind of like doing some cross promotion there.
It's very possible, because I didn't realize this was New Line Cinema. This is Roger Corman's production company.
Mm-hmm.
His name wasn't on the film anywhere, but this is his production company that produced this film. So that being a Corman epic, if you want to call it that, on that TV, that's a possibility. I didn't recognize it either. I was trying to figure it out, but I couldn't recognize it. So it was either a film I'm not aware of, or they just filmed a bunch of... It could be a bunch of outtakes from some other film, you know?
Right. There was like a quick flash of nudity in there. I saw
noticed
too,
that.
Which is just funny. Where, I mean, maybe not funny is the right word, but like if you're going to have nudity in your movie, that's fine. But then to have it in like the movie within your movie that's like on the TV screen for like 4 seconds almost seems like a waste, you know? like that's it. I don't know. I thought that was kind of an odd choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was very, very bizarre. I was trying. I wish I could figure out what film it was. I haven't been able to track it down yet. Because it looked awful.
Yes, it definitely did. That's for sure.
But he also finds a channel showing Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein when he's in the hotel room. So that's fun.
And they make an obligatory Ronald Reagan joke.
Yes.
Which I guess is before Back to the Future, though.
Yes.
Before, but Back to the Future did it much better. Great.
I don't know. I like this. I was like, hey, I think I know this guy. Is this another movie? I thought it was nice. It was a little bit more subtle, I guess.
I mean, right. There's inevitably going to be the time travel movie eventually where someone from the 80s goes to modern day, and they're going to have the same Ronald Reagan, Donald Trump, I remember that guy. Yeah, right, President. It's like on The Simpsons where they just, you know, make it up.
It's, right.
It's the same joke they're doing here. I just thought it was very clever, but I guess it was an obvious joke, right? Wouldn't it be for 1984?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely, yeah.
some movie star. It was the first time, like, a non-military, famous general, vice president kind of guy. It was just a movie star.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we talked a little bit about the cast. Michael, the two characters. I did think they did a nice job casting the older Jimmy. I thought they did a nice job casting younger and older Jimmy. I thought older Jimmy looked like what younger Jimmy would age to. I thought mm-hmm. that was a nice touch. Nancy Allen is in it. I think she's a lot of fun. She sort of should have been, I think she kind of, you know, she did this film, she did RoboCop. Nancy Allen was going to be like that 80s star that just for some reason just, her career just sort of stopped or just sort of petered out or something. Not sure why.
She was like the consistent actor in all three RoboCops, right?
Been a long time since I've seen anything other than the first one, yeah.
Yeah, I guess kind of a shame. I mean, she's definitely, you know, one of the better actors in this movie. I mean, her character arc is confusing, to put it mildly. But yeah, I mean, she's fine in the role. I was just confused. I'm like, so this guy kidnapped her. He seems like he's crazy, but she's like, I'll just stay with him because my job interview got canceled or something.
Like, I got nothing better to do.
Right.
Yeah, so
right. Motivation there.
I'll buy him dinner and a coat, and we'll rent a car together, and yeah.
It is one of those films that you can really tell the difference between people that are real professional actors. And there were some people that were acting that were perfectly fine. But when they're on the screen with other people, it seems very, I wonder if it's all frustrating during the set. Like, it's very striking at some points. I thought, but Nancy Allen, I think, is a fine actress. And I think she does fine with what she's written. And I found her charming, even though I agree I don't really understand why she suddenly there could have been like a line thrown in that she could have been like, how could it? My uncle was stationed at that place, and no one's ever met. There's no reason she finally believes that,
right?
Like, I thought that was missing. Like, even just a throwaway line that would be whatever, that she understands something about 1943. And there was even going to be at one point one of the military, or I think it was a doctor, that was about to say, I want to just ask you, I want to believe you, but I want to ask you a question that only someone from 1943 will be able to answer. And I was like, that's great. This older guy is either from World War II or his dad was in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And then the guy's like, I don't have time for this. And he runs away. I was like, no, this is going to prove it. But oh well.
And there's that scene where they get to the gas station that his dad used to work at. And she sees the pictures of him and his dad, and that's what makes her start to believe him. And I'm sitting there going, those could have been taken yesterday. Like, that doesn't prove, like, there's not, like...
But they're black and white, Matt.
So what?
It's weirder that this new gas station would have it up. It's actually...
Right.
Like, I was wondering that. I was like, oh, maybe this is his nephew he's never met.
Right.
No, this is like a Texaco now, and they still have this wallpaper full of, like, it looks like, you know, a teenager's, like, mirror that they have pictures just all over it.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be... I thought it was going to be they kind of missed an opportunity. Maybe it would be his little brother that maybe was, like, just been born, like maybe he was only a year old or something like that.
I never met my brother. He went missing in the 40s.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So perfect. There was a guy when they show up to the gas station underneath the car.
Yeah.
I'll be with you in 1 minute. I'm like, oh, this is going to be the person that tells us what's going on.
This is the reveal, right?
No, it was a guy that looked like Jimmy Olsen.
Yeah. Yeah, a little missed opportunity there to kind of help seal a little bit of the story for Nancy Allen's character, I think, mm-hmm. a little bit.
Definitely.
Yeah. Anyone else then in the cast that really stood out? You mentioned Needle Nose.
Needle Nose Ned.
Needle Nose Ned.
Ned the Head?
Yep.
But you mentioned older Jimmy, and all mm-hmm. I could think is, like, that again didn't go anywhere. It's like, we've gotta go. Wait, he's still there. Let's go talk to him. I don't want to talk. All right, let's get back in the car. We're going back where we came from. It's like, he's the worst friend ever, and that never comes back.
Yeah, I didn't really understand his reasoning. Oh, he just doesn't want to live it again. Well, what do you mean he doesn't want to live it again? He finally has someone that he like. This is proof that that I wasn't crazy. No one's gonna lock me up now because I'm talking to this guy.
Right. And you think, like, he knows he time-traveled. Maybe people convinced him he imagined it, but at the same time, wouldn't you be paranoid being like, it's 1984, this is when it's supposed to happen?
Right, yeah.
That I would be waiting for that. I would be like, okay, I know when we popped up, I'm gonna figure out where we are, I'm gonna finally prove if this really happened or not.
And it doesn't even really work, the whole he doesn't want to relive it thing, because then you get the scene with him and Pam in the house, and he's like, I just wish it was over for him already. So he already knows that this guy has more to experience. So was it the whole you can't tell anyone about the future thing? If it is, that's not conveyed very well.
No. He's just the worst friend ever.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he had a lot of time to think about how he was going to, you know, respond in that moment that he knew was coming.
Yeah.
He really dropped the ball.
But, you know, what's his name? I already forgot the main character's name.
David,
yeah. David kind of dropped the ball when he actually finally gets to see young Jimmy again on the ship before he jumps overboard. He could have told him, was like, look, don't let him tell you're crazy. I'll see you in, you know, 40 years. Something. Give him something. But no, he didn't.
I wrote the exact same thing. I said, David sees Jimmy and then he leaves. No mention, like, don't discuss this with the Navy docs, because then they're going to put you in an asylum.
Right.
And you're going to go crazy. Everything's okay, and just don't mention it. And I thought it was right there, yeah, but he just goes, hey, Jimmy, see you around. And he's like, wait, was I just in the future? They're telling me that never happened, that I didn't see my friend David come back with me and have an adventure. He could have saved him another life of misery. He literally saw, you know, he saw what happens to him if he is not explained that this did happen, but he's not crazy.
But this
he also maybe could have helped that guy who, like, you know, got cut off in the deck, you know, and his face was, like, half in the concrete, you know. He maybe could have helped out a little bit more. But, as we noted before, he's not really interested in helping people.
No, and this all goes back to Matt was talking about the secular time thing. He couldn't tell him, don't tell the Army the Navy docs. It would have changed things. So we already know. We knew going in that he wasn't going to tell anybody better.
I was going through it. I was kind of comparing the different time travel rules, and I noticed that this movie has Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure time travel rules in that. At one point when David goes back to 1943 and has to do something to help the future, it should happen instantaneously the second he went back in time, because that was 40 years ago already. But they kind of wait until it happens in the movie, and they go, oh, he must have done it. And I'm like, oh, it's like in San Dimas, the clock is always going.
Yeah.
I just thought that was, it's different time travel rules, but a lot of these things were different than the trope I would have assumed, having seen now a dozen different time travel movies and their own rules.
At least this follows the rules that it sets down a little better, and it's not one of those movies where by the end, wait, so none of this actually happened?
Right. It happened.
Yeah, no, this actually all did happen, and it's still within this universe anyway. It makes a little bit of, well, we'll say makes sense, I guess, for lack of a better term.
Right, yeah, so then he and what's her name, Nancy Allen's character, they go and just, like, have this nice life together in 1984, and what's the last line? Like, the Navy owes me, like, 40 years of back pay or something?
Yeah. Yeah. No, probably don't. But so you got an unemployed woman who was looking to, I think she was just traveling to be for like a secretarial job. I don't think it was anything big. You got a guy that's been
legally dead for
40 years. I don't really see a future for these two.
Not a financially well off one.
No. Good luck getting credit.
Right.
Yeah, buy buying a home is going to be challenging for these two.
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, he decides to live in 1984 instead of 1943. And I thought it was interesting because they, you know, you always think, what about all the people you love and are your family and everything? And they kind of imply that, you know, he had this father. So they he finds out later through the garage that his dad got to live his great life and he got to do everything he ever wanted to and just died. So there's really, I guess if he, you know, they kind of wrapped up dad's storyline a little bit so that it was a little permission for him to abandon everyone and go to 84.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I guess we can... kind of under the assumption that dad was his only family, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe mom had passed away earlier or something, because yeah, I don't think we ever hear a mention of his mother.
No. So. It sends this weird message of like, oh, your kids are holding you back, even though they're adults. It's not until after David vanishes, because he's like, my dad got to go and live the life he wanted. Even I didn't believe in him. It's like, okay, oh. We just had to get rid of you for him to live his best life.
I kept thinking the stakes of this were going to be that, David, you need to go back in time and save both of our planets, or otherwise everyone's going to die. But when you go back and shut the reactor, it's going to explode and you're going to die.
Right.
Did anyone else think that was the, and it was going to be,
yes.
I thought he was going to have to do that. And,
absolutely. I did too.
Yeah. So I thought it was, again, I mean, you know, it's just a different movie than, I'm not saying that was the obvious thing that should have happened. No, I just thought that would have been that's a really interesting dilemma here. No, he goes back, flicks the switch, jumps back in time and gets the girl. Like, I didn't quite understand that he was able to jump back.
Yeah, it's, the happy story. Maybe that was part of the studio. We need a happy ending. We need a romance and a happy ending. Yeah.
There's like, no reason. Go ahead.
I felt like, had this been based on a novel, in the novel, he dies. Very heroically.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But this is like, they wanted to make maybe a franchise. It's $24 million. That's a big budget. I mean, what you said was compared to. Like, we go over budgets a lot in our films, and that's quite a high budget. Like, I think the studio had high expectations for this.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it only took in $8 million, so.
Ooh, yeah.
But even his whole thing about like, okay, I've turned everything off. Now I'm gonna go back. He has no reason to think he can go back. Like, you've turned everything off.
Well, and like, he even kind of says something. You know, Jimmy says you're going back. He's like, I don't know what what's gonna happen, but I can't stay here because he knows he disappeared.
I kept waiting for him to jump off the side and just splash. It's like, no, dude, that wasn't gonna work.
I think he was just lucky since he goes out there and he just gets sucked up that he actually lands on the ship, yeah. And not on the floating town. Yeah.
Right.
But maybe he was connected because that's where he came from. You know,
sure.
That was his time zone. Yeah.
I think that Jimmy gets corrected because he saw a couple things on television. He got a couple good, like, I saw the Digital Corporation. Like, whenever I see any of these things pop up in the 60s or 70s, I will invest.
And, yeah.
And, the universe owes him.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, maybe he did. I mean, that was a pretty nice farm he had. So the farm must be either doing really well or he took advantage of a few things he might have seen.
It's possible. He invented it in aluminum cans. That's what it is.
It all comes full circle.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know if there's anything else you wanted to say about Phil Gilbert. We say this, we've kind of bashed a lot of stuff. You know, the plot doesn't work, the character, the acting and everything. But I'll be damned if I still didn't enjoy watching the film.
I was entertained. It was It was just bad enough to have fun with it.
Mm. Okay.
You know, it's, for me, it's a little refreshing. I don't have to give a definitive, does this stand the test of time? Or
well, I was going to ask.
Yeah. What do you mean you don't have to?
Because I really liked what you said, you know, just watching it. It was like, this is, to me, a kind of cheesy 80s film. That doesn't mean bad. There's a lot of cheesy 80s films. This was a cheesy 80s film that was kind of dressed like a 70s film. And... you know, I I think what you said earlier, just the premise is awesome. I just think it's good enough. It's like, okay, something military experiment. I'm on board, and whatever goes on. You, like today, you mentioned the word DARPA. Okay, I'm on board. They're doing something. That's clandestine and high tech. So this the premise makes sense. When I was like looking up some of the actors, and I typed in, I saw that there were some. I think maybe made for cable sequels. And I was thinking, like, good for them, because it is a good premise. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the kind of film that I think redone, you could base a lot on it and just, you know, tighten stuff up. I think the beginning, there was a little bit too much stuff in 1943. It did take a little while for the actual explosion to go wrong. But I thought the movie was fun. Just the cast got me out of it. The special effects were, I could watch. I can watch Night of the Living Dead from 1960 and be okay with that, even though it doesn't look like the Walking Dead zombies. So it doesn't have to be great graphics. But for me, I don't think this particular film stands up. But I think this would be a great film to remake. I think it's a fantastic premise. And if you want to watch an 80s film, like, I agree. I had fun with it. But sometimes I like to say the premise of, if you've never seen any of these time travel movies, like here, that's not the first one I'd be watching.
Fair.
It's a fun film. You catch it on cable. It's not bad. You know, it's not, oh, God, Weekend at Bernie's is, I think, the worst one reviewed on this. Just, oh, God, like, what are they marionetting this dead guy for next? This film, it carried me from point A to point B.
Sweet.
I don't know that I 100% agree with it's not bad. I think you could make the argument that maybe it's so bad it's good.
Yeah, that's where I am.
Yeah, I feel like it's not bad. I mean, again, just my take on it. I don't know that. I feel like that might be a stretch, in my opinion, but... I'm definitely glad that I watched it. I know, like, you know, it's cool that I've seen it, and I appreciate you guys inviting us on to talk about it and everything. And but yeah, I just felt like the acting was so bad, and like the premise, yes, I agree with you that it's like it's cool, and the way that they handle the time travel is all done well, but just like kind of how they get along the way, I was just like, wait, what? Why is she still with him? Why is he like so angry about like old man Jimmy that he's like, oh, I gotta go back, and then they don't, and like these things just kind of, you know, it's like, oh, I gotta find my answers. Is it worth it? Is it worth it to die and kill people? Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I felt like the stakes weren't there for me. You know, like I understood why he was frustrated, but I don't know. I just sort of felt like it was more about getting him there because that's where the script needed to get him than really giving like motivation for him as a character of like why he cares and why he's going from A to B to C.
Yeah, no, completely agree. Yeah, there was a Phil Diffley Experiment 2, which I think is pretty unremarkable. I'm sure I watched it. I have no memory of it, though. And then there was I think 2014 direct-to-video remake.
Sci-Fi Channel, I think.
Probably aired on Sci-Fi Channel. You can find it on DVD. You'd probably find it streaming, whatever. I'm trying to remember if I watched that one. I think I did, again.
Can't remember it.
Can't remember it, so I'm going to say that's pretty unremarkable as well, so...
That's a shame, because again, it's a good premise that I think with good acting and good special effects, which would be fine now. They don't have to be amazing. They would have to be passable now. Mm-hmm. And I think it could work.
Yeah, well,
you could do better special effects on like iMovie now, I think.
I did put a note down that as David kind of jumps into the vortex, I wrote, activate Windows 95 screensaver.
All right, well, I appreciate you three watching the film and kind of reliving a little bit of my childhood with me here. Chrissy didn't have to be so hard on it. No. guys.
Sorry. Yeah, it was good. It's good to have seen it. I'm definitely glad that I've seen the movie.
Gotcha. I would not have seen this film, probably ever. It would have just stayed on the list. But now I watched it. Like, oh, yeah, Philadelphia. So I could be like that lady in the library with you, Al. Like, yeah. I think I liked it, maybe. That's what it's going to say in 20 years.
If Michael Paré is listening and he is offended, I apologize, Michael. I'm sure you're great. I'm sorry.
Please contact us to talk more about your career. That would be awesome.
Yeah.
Well, James, Alan, thank you very much for joining us. Here's a great opportunity for you guys to tell us, you know, where can people find your show?
Sure. Yes. Well, thank you both for inviting us and having us on. We really appreciate that. You can find us pretty much anywhere you find podcasts. We're on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and SoundCloud and Stitcher and Google Play and all of the places. And follow us on social media. We are at Test of Time Pod on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. New episodes drop every Friday. And you can visit our website, testoftimepod.com. Everything's Test of Time Pod, so it's really easy to remember.
Sweet.
And it's been great to come on your show. If you guys ever want to come on, I think Matt, did you say Iron Giant? Was that one that you'd mentioned?
I would love to talk the Iron Giant. That would you'll have to cut me off at one point and just be like, okay, we can't have a 5-hour show.
Oh, that's fine. I mean, I haven't seen that movie in ages, so that's on our list as well. So we'll have to figure out a time we can do that, because awesome. I'd love to rewatch that movie.
That'd
be great film.
What are some films coming up for you guys that are going to be dropping soon?
Oh, well, we're doing the Terminator 1 and 2 for the new Dark Fate movie James mentioned. We're doing
for a holiday film this year. We're doing Trading Places.
Yeah, you said you wanted to do Trading Places for New Year's.
That's a good one.
Yeah, and I'm really excited because we're going to be doing, in honor of Star Wars Episode 9, we're going to be doing the original Star Wars trilogy in December.
Wonderful. Nice.
So that's going to be really, really fun.
Yeah.
Those are movies. I mean, I could rewatch those anytime. I don't need an excuse to rewatch them, but you know, I mean, this is as good of an excuse as any, right? So, excited to watch those.
Excellent. The only thing I also wanted to mention is, I guess if we're going to plug something, Alan and I actually have a charity that we support. In December, we founded this charity with a couple of our friends about 11 years ago now, right?
Yeah, this will be the 11th year, yeah.
11th year of the Knicks Marathon. It's in honor of our friend Nick Capobianco, who passed away about 11 years ago now. And we actually play video games for an entire weekend straight, and we raise a lot of money, some from people we know and a lot from strangers. So it's
nice.
People get to watch us, follow us, play along with us even, and we're at nicksmarathon.org. And what are the dates of the marathon this year, Al?
It's December 13th, which is a Friday. We'll start at 8 p.m. Eastern that night, so and that whole weekend. So December 14th, 15th. You can go to nicksmarathon.org. You can watch a bunch of nerds hanging around playing video games. You can chat with us and say, hey, how you doing? Play something else. Change it. You guys are terrible. Why do you suck at this level?
Yes.
It's fine. And you know, hopefully if you're so inclined, make a donation. It is tax deductible. You can make, you know, we'll get your receipt and everything. And yeah, no, that's definitely something to check out. NicksMarathon.org.
Excellent. Okay, and I will make sure that there are links to everything in the show notes, so people have a really easy access there.
Awesome.
I'm trying to find it. How is Nick's spelled?
N-I-C-K-S.
Okay, cool.
Like, there should be the apostrophe there, but it's just not, because it's
a website. Yep.
Got it.
And then also at Nick's Marathon on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as well.
Sweet. Okay. All right, well, once again, guys, thank you very much, and good luck with all your endeavors in the future there. Enjoy watching your old movies, and hope you enjoy them all.
Great, thank you. Thank you again for having us. This has been awesome.
All right. Thanks, this is great. Good talking to you.
So we will be back in a couple weeks. We've got a film lined up, and it is going to be, I already forgot, because I never have the calendar in front of me.
1998's Small Soldiers.
Oh, right. All right, those will be fun. I'm sure I haven't seen this since 1998, 99, so that'll be a good one.
I think that's one of, that's a Phil Hartman. I think he's a voice in that.
Yeah, I believe you're right.
All right.
Nice.
Tommy Lee Jones, too.
Tommy Lee Jones, yeah. Franklin Gala.
Yeah.
It's one of those early DreamWorks animated films.
That sounds right.
Yeah. Well, we'll find out in a couple weeks. So thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you in a couple weeks. Bye, everybody.